The Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to our continuing coverage of the coronavirus health crisis. I'm Bill Price. Economic pandemic.
The problem is this is like a flood and the waters are still rising.
That is our top story at noon. Business analyst Jill Schlesinger responding to today's government report that 6.6 million Americans filed for unemployment benefits last week. That's double the week before's number, which was also a record.
And it is going to seem like these numbers are horrible for weeks on end. We are obviously in a recession already. We usually only claim a recession in retrospect, but it's clear from these numbers that we are there.
Experts say the jobless rate in this country could go as high as 15% this month. Joblessness isn't the only thing going up in the country because of the coronavirus. The number of deaths also rising.
We don't know all the answers, and we don't know exactly how this is going to turn out.
The death toll from COVID-19 has now passed 5,100 in the U.S., with over 1,000 deaths yesterday alone. This is how a nurse in Brooklyn describes her ICU.
The turnover, someone passes away, all right, get the room clean, next person in immediately. I mean, there's patients sitting in the ER on ventilators waiting to come up. So there's really just no break.
In 72 hours in New York State, the number of coronavirus deaths more than doubled. Governor Cuomo has now closed all playgrounds.
Who else has to die for you to understand you have a responsibility in this?
First responders in New York City now treating heart attack victims at the scene instead of bringing them to the hospital. Dr. Anthony Fauci with the president's coronavirus task force says the only thing that can help us right now is for healthy people to stay away from one another.
Even though we need to anticipate these rather disturbing numbers, we shouldn't give up and accept it and say, okay, that's going to happen. We need to push and push with the mitigation to try and get that number lower than the projected number by the model.
And that model shows a number Dr. Fauci says none of us should accept. At least 100,000 deaths from the virus in the U.S. Today, Vice President Mike Pence said the country should be back to normal by Memorial Day. With the number of COVID-19 cases multiplying every single day in the country, cities across America now taking matters into their own hands. In L.A., Mayor Eric Garcetti says anyone outside in the nation's second largest city needs to cover their face.
We are now recommending that Angelenos use homemade face coverings when they are in public and interacting with others.
In New York City, the epicenter of the virus, Mayor Bill de Blasio says they desperately need more medical supplies.
To help our city in our time of need. We're dealing with a big challenge together, but we are certainly not alone, and there are so many amazing stories of people who want to help and are helping and are giving their all for New York City right now.
De Blasio says this Sunday will be a crucial day when it comes to supplying the Big Apple with masks, gowns, and ventilators. President Trump says the national stockpile of protective equipment is nearly gone. That's because those items have already been shipped out to hospitals that need them. Mr. Trump says he's not ready to send out the 10,000 ventilators still remaining in the national stockpile.
We have to have the flexibility of moving the ventilators to where the virus is going.
The president says several companies are now working to manufacture the machines, but he cautions,
when you make one, it doesn't get made in 15 minutes.
Mr. Trump says the machines are complex and expensive to make. Earlier this week, 60 tons of medical equipment from Russia arrived at JFK in New York to help in the fight against COVID-19. Plans in place to help passengers stuck on board two cruise ships off the coast of Florida. People are sick on board, and on one of those ships, the remains of five passengers who've died from the coronavirus. Governor Ron DeSantis has allowed the ships to dock, but hasn't allowed anyone to get off. This woman's parents are on board.
Medical attention, they're doing the best they can, but I think he needs more than that on land.
Jennifer Allen says while she understands the dangers of unloading the passengers on land, many of those passengers will die if they don't get off.
We don't want anybody to be infected in Fort Lauderdale because they want to land there. We just want to make sure that the people that are really sick get help fast.
Medical staff have now boarded those two cruise ships to help treat the sick passengers. The coronavirus impacting politics too. The Democratic National Convention set for this summer in Milwaukee. Some have suggested moving that convention back a month. Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden.
One of the reasons why the Democratic convention was going to be held early was the Olympics were coming after the Republican convention. There is more time now. We ought to be able to. We were able to, in the middle of the Civil War all the way through to World War II, have Democratic and Republican conventions and primaries and elections.
As of right now, the DNC still set to go July 13th through the 16th. In Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Still to come this Thursday, will there be school again this year? We'll take a closer look, plus the effort to ban cross-state travel and helping families make ends meet.
Good afternoon. The afternoon promises a cool breeze, sun, and patchy clouds. I'll be back to detail the forecast heading into the weekend coming up. We'll look for you in 10 minutes.
Thank you, Kevin Williams. Checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania. Thursday, April 2nd, will the kids return to school this year? That is the big question across our listening area today. Niagara Falls Superintendent Mark Laurie says it won't happen this month.
We're preparing for the long haul on this. We're probably about 50-50 that we won't return at this point. I think we'll know much more around the end of April.
Laurie says he won't allow kids to return to school in Niagara Falls until it's absolutely safe to do so.
I think we have to remember, once we hit our apex of this health crisis, we still have to come down. And when we come down from the apex, that doesn't mean an immediate return to what we were doing.
As for when school is considered to be safe to open, I'll trust the governor to make a good decision on that.
That's Michael Cornell, the superintendent in nearby Hamburg, New York. He says this health crisis has turned public education upside down.
Families are really having to support learning at home in ways that they've never had to before. I give people a lot of credit because the circumstances are very, very difficult.
Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf has closed schools indefinitely in the Commonwealth. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo using two-week increments to do it, with the next decision coming in mid-April. Could students be moving up in the Keystone State? Family Life's Brandon Dixon takes a closer look.
Governor Wolf is considering promoting K through 12 students to the next grade or graduating them if they had passing grades before public schools were closed due to the coronavirus. During a news conference, he said the education department is looking at that possibility. School districts around the state are struggling to get their educational programs back on track as they deal with ensuring students have access to lessons or the technology being used to deliver instruction. Some are resorting to sending out packets of enrichment activities, which are not being counted toward their grade. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brandon. Several Pennsylvania lawmakers trying to keep New Yorkers out of the Keystone State.
This is a very serious situation, and we don't want people traveling from hot spots coming here and making our area a hotter spot than it already is.
Republican Representative Tara Tuhill from Luzerne County, one of several state lawmakers who sent a letter to New York Governor Cuomo and Pennsylvania Governor Wolf asking both to clamp down on travel between the two states.
In the Hazleton area, it's a smaller community, and we're not equipped to be able to handle having more patients than we normally do have.
Tuhill thinks the spike in cases in COVID-19 in Pennsylvania coming from New York City. Yesterday, Governor Tom Wolf announced a statewide stay-at-home order for the entire Commonwealth. He says he does not plan to close the border, though, between New York and Pennsylvania. Because of the health crisis, state police in Pennsylvania no longer responding to certain calls. Authorities say identity theft cases, bad checks, or a general request to speak with a trooper will now be handled over the phone.
They should not be alarmed or concerned that we are still responding to any type of emergency, burglaries in progress, robberies in progress, crashes, assaults in progress, anything that needs immediate assistance, we will be there for that.
State Trooper Brent Miller.
Our goal is to keep the public as safe as possible, as well as keeping our own troopers safe.
The new policy going to be in place until further notice in Pennsylvania. Some workers in the Keystone State say they're being forced to work in close proximity to others during this outbreak.
Employee concerns were captured in a story published by the Morning Call of Allentown. The 15-plus warehouse workers in the Lehigh Valley spoke to the newspaper on condition of anonymity for fear of reprisals at the various facilities where they work. Many of them, working paycheck to paycheck already, said they feel pressured to report to work at warehouses where positive cases of coronavirus have been disclosed. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Thank you, Terry. A tentative agreement has been reached on that $178 billion state budget in New York. Yesterday, the deadline for that spending plan, and Governor Cuomo says a provisional budget now in place, even amid the coronavirus outbreak.
I applaud the Assembly and the Senate. With everything going on, we did not scale back our efforts or our ambitions to advance this state to greater heights.
120,000 state employees may not get paid, though, under the spending plan, which includes an emergency bailout for Rochester City schools. The budget does not include the legalization of marijuana. Businesses struggling in Pennsylvania amid the outbreak, still waiting for some federal relief. Republican Scott Perry says they can't wait much longer.
They can't wait 4, 5, 6 months for an agency to figure this out.
Perry says the $2.2 trillion relief package has to start arriving soon, or it's going to be too late to do any good.
Will it be enough? We don't know yet because we don't know how far this is going to go. Time will tell. But and like I said, if we've got to do more, we will do more.
Congressman Perry says the money should be available to small businesses before the end of the week. Well, it's not just businesses feeling the financial pinch from the coronavirus. Families are in a money mess, too. In Pennsylvania, State Attorney General Josh Shapiro says those who can't afford their rent during the outbreak cannot be evicted.
What we're doing, though, is making sure that there is this buffer. There is this moment of security that tenants can feel during this challenging time to know that they're not going to lose the roof over their head.
Shapiro says he's working with state agencies to make sure late fees are waived and grace periods are given during this time of financial hardship. Brady versus Manning. Sunny time. 2-minute drill.
Thank you, Bill. Good afternoon. Tom Brady against Peyton Manning again, this time on the golf course. According to golf.com, Brady and Manning will pair up with either Tiger Woods or Phil Mickelson when the golf stars rematch. The 18-hole charity event will take place 2 weeks before pro sports leagues return. Brady's former boss, New England Patriots owner Bob Kraft, is using a team plane to bring protective equipment from China to Boston amid the coronavirus outbreak. Governor Charlie Baker plans to meet the plane when it lands today before the National Guard takes the equipment to a stockpile of masks, wipes, and gowns, which the state's medical workers are in desperate need of. The Republican governor says that he's concerned after being told by the federal government to find their own supplies. Buffalo Sabres captain Jack Eichel with a timely announcement on social media.
I'm happy to team up with my friends from Bauer Hockey in purchasing medical masks for the hospitals of Western New York to keep them healthier and safer during these tough times. Let's continue to do our part as they continue to do theirs. And together, I know we will get through this.
Eichel purchased 5,000 personal protective equipment masks to be distributed to local hospitals dealing with shortages. Eichel purchased the mask from Bauer Hockey, which has shifted its production from making sports equipment. NBA news, the Knicks are eyeing 76ers general manager Elton Brand for their open GM position. New Knicks president Leon Rose has identified Brand as someone he'd like in the role. Brand took over for the 76ers in 2018. Steelers' new tight end, Eric Ebron, excited to play in the Steel City, saying that he's always had love for Ben Roethlisberger and respect for head coach Mike Tomlin. The North Carolina product has 27 career touchdown catches in 83 games. And Major League Baseball has canceled its two-game series between the Chicago Cubs and St. Louis Cardinals in London due to the outbreak. The two National League rivals were slated to meet in an Olympic stadium from June 13th to 14th. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Delfiette.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Thursday edition of the Noon Report, the coronavirus takes its toll physically and economically. We'll have the very latest, plus what healthcare workers are doing to protect themselves, a conversation with a doctor from Michigan, and at the end of today's broadcast, Good Night with Dolly starts tonight.
Right in the middle of a loneliness epidemic comes social distancing. This is a bad combination. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Last month, we were all introduced to a new concept, social distancing, urged, even required in places to maintain physical distance and reduce close contact with other people. Our collective goal? To slow the spread of COVID-19 and keep it from overwhelming our healthcare system. There's a very real problem with this strategy, however. While social distancing might be the best way to fight the coronavirus, it may very well exacerbate an already existing epidemic. Loneliness. As former Surgeon General Vivek Murthy put it, we live in the most technologically connected age in the history of civilization, and yet rates of loneliness have doubled since the 1980s. The health impact of the loneliness epidemic is incredible. According to Murthy, the impact of social isolation and loneliness on longevity equals smoking 15 cigarettes a day and exceeds the risk associated with obesity, excessive alcohol consumption, and lack of exercise. To put it plainly, loneliness can be just as lethal, maybe even more so than COVID-19. Certainly in the long run. A group that should be at the front of our concerns when it comes to loneliness are the elderly. According to one study, some 18% of adults age 65 and up in the U.S. live alone. 43% report feeling lonely on a regular basis. Still, the loneliness epidemic isn't limited to older Americans. In fact, Gen Z might be the loneliest generation on record. According to a 2018 Cigna survey, those born in 1995 or later report greater feelings of loneliness and worse health than any other generation. Social media was supposed to make up for this lack of actual human contact we face. As we're promised, the generation most at ease with social media certainly isn't showing it. Apparently, digital natives are lonelier than the baby boomers they love to turn into memes. And again, all of this was true before social distancing went into effect. So during the next few months, the face-to-face activities that build relationships and keep loneliness at bay will be difficult, in some cases, impossible. Months ago, we decided at the Colson Center to host an online short course on how Christians can respond to our culture's brokenness. We had no idea at the time we'd be facing a global pandemic. So on Tuesday, we hosted a webinar with Ed Stetzer on how Christians can respond to the coronavirus. If you missed it, it's completely free. Come to breakpoint.org and you can get the recording. The short course starts next Tuesday. And in the first of four sessions, we deal with this other epidemic. Dr. Kathy Cook, president of Celebrate Kids, will talk about how Christians can respond to loneliness, isolation, and relational brokenness. In other words, our other pandemic. Cook has written extensively about how Christian parents can teach their kids who they really are and how to help them navigate the social norms that so often isolate them. Please join us next Tuesday, April the 8th at 8 p.m. Eastern. You can come to breakpoint.org to register. The course will continue for the following three Thursdays. We'll confront other areas of brokenness too. Ricky Shalette, Executive Director of Living Hope Ministries, will talk about how Christians can respond to those who are sexually broken. Ben Mitchell, Professor of Philosophy at Union University, will talk about how Christians can help lead in end-of-life care. And then David Galvan, Director of Education for a Lifetime at Life Network, will talk about how we can respond to mental health and addiction. All the short course sessions are recorded, so even if you have to miss a week, you will not miss a single presentation. Come to breakpoint.org to register today for our short course. That's breakpoint.org. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
Coming up on 20 minutes past the hour, Thursday afternoon, let's take it outside. Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. On the midday weather map, we've got quite the storm swirling well off the East Coast. And although its main impacts will stay far from here, its peripheral impacts will include a breeze this afternoon, some clouds and a few spotty sprinkles tonight and tomorrow. Our forecast for this afternoon, sunshine, some patchy clouds, a bit of a breeze for some, and temperatures peaking in the 40s to near 50. A fair amount of cloudiness around tonight and tomorrow. A couple of sprinkles and flurries for a few, especially the areas around central New York and eastern Pennsylvania. Low tonight, 30s. The high tomorrow, 40s to near 50. Friday night, The clouds will linger, but then clear for some developing sunshine on Saturday with a high temperature then in the 50s.
Thank you, Kevin Williams. If you are just joining us, here is the very latest on the coronavirus health crisis for Thursday, April 2nd. While the human toll from the coronavirus is tragic, the economic toll getting worse by the day. The government today said a shocking 6.6 million Americans filed for jobless claims last week. That breaks the record high of 3.3 million just last week.
Whether it's in the healthcare realm or the economic realm, no nation on earth has ever faced what the world is facing right now.
That is Florida Senator Marco Rubio. Here's business analyst Jill Schlesinger.
We are obviously in a recession already. We're not talking about something we've ever seen before. We're talking about something that is essentially a health pandemic that is now morphed into an economic pandemic.
Bank of America predicts this will be the worst recession on record in the U.S. Despite a government projection showing the number of deaths in the U.S. from the coronavirus could reach 100,000 at the very least, Dr. Anthony Fauci says they're working hard to push that number much lower.
Focusing on those who have symptoms, getting them identified, isolated, trying to get contact tracing, doing physical separation. But what we would like to do reasonably soon is to get a better feel for the totality of the infection in the community, even those who've recovered.
Some health researchers say the daily death toll could double in the next 2 weeks, and a University of Washington model predicts a daily death toll of more than 2,200 by mid-April. Should Americans be wearing face masks when they go out in public? The health experts say, why not?
You put a mask in front of you, you can block the droplets. And so the whole notion of wearing masks when you go out, which is now mandatory in the city of Los Angeles, or it's recommended in the city of Los Angeles, I should say, it's to protect others. And I think it's fantastic.
That's professor of medicine at USC, Dr. David Agus. While China is under fire from U.S. intelligence officials for under-reporting the number of COVID-19 cases there, Japan also making news for downplaying the virus. Correspondent Vicky Barker takes a closer look.
Trains and restaurants still packed in Japan. Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's downplayed the crisis, as the attitude of these people in Tokyo makes clear.
I have a meeting, so I will be out until nighttime.
It's hard to imagine myself being infected with it. It's other people's problem.
But epidemiologist Kenji Shibuya says a full-blown pandemic is already underway.
I think Japan is now in the explosive phase.
Japanese hospitals say they're already overwhelmed by the health crisis. They're government seems reluctant to acknowledge.
That's Vicky Barker reporting. Coming up on 23 minutes past the hour, next at noon, Family Life's Brandon Dixon sits down with Dr. Dawn Day at Spring Arbor University in Michigan. She shares some timely tips on what hospitals are doing to keep their workers safe in the fight against COVID-19.
We've been talking about this coronavirus, it seems like years now, it's only been weeks, but it's affecting hospitals and medical personnel especially. So what can hospitals and staff do to really prepare for this potential deluge of cases that might be coming in as we get more confirmed cases?
Hospitals and staff can be prepared by, first and foremost, providing clear and frequent communication. As we are getting new information every day, it's going to be important for staff to learn about new policies and information related to care and processes. This is going to be a critical point for them. Also, it allows them to be empowered and well-prepared, so it's going to reduce stress and errors as we start to care for these patients as they're coming in. So daily meetings for planning and needs assessment should be really a common practice at this point in facilities. I think they can be prepared by also effective training on how to recognize and respond to COVID-19 and how to properly use equipment that they potentially have not used ever before or haven't used in a long time. We're already seeing that in order to maintain preventative measures and preserve resources, facilities are canceling non-urgent procedures. They're implementing telehealth, which is allowing patients to meet with their providers by phone or video conferencing. And we're seeing some drive-through care all around the country that allows patients to drive up to a provider and be assessed or treated without getting out of their car. We also are seeing facilities have created or transitioned existing units to be COVID units. So the hospitals all have COVID units where we can regionalize the care for these patients. So the preparation has been excellent.
You mentioned some of the different things that are going on, and specifically within these probably daily briefings, these meetings, there's measures in place. There's things that the CDC has recommended for everyone. Hospital staff, I'm sure, included of hand washing and proper measures, especially covering your coughs and sneezes. Are there any other things that medical staff can do to make sure that they stay healthy as they are, right there by this virus on a daily basis?
Absolutely. So as you know, one of the most significant tools for fighting illness is a healthy immune system. And so nurses are notorious for pushing themselves and caring for others over self-care. So this is a really important question. There are some strategies to build immunity and stay healthy. Of course, you mentioned the strict hand washing practices. So using that foam soap for 20 seconds, that's going to be critical. Adequate hydration, at least 8 to 10 glasses of water a day. But, sleep and stress are big influencers of the immune health. So getting 7 to 9 hours of sleep a night is critical. This is when the body produces and releases proteins that actually target infection and inflammation. So if nurses or medical staff can't get those 7 to 9 hours, taking a couple of naps throughout the day, 20-minute naps would be a great help to them to kind of repair the body and prepare it. Also, stress-reducing practices like deep breathing, even 1-minute breaks throughout the day of deep diaphragmatic breathing can impact the immune system. Aerobic activity is great. Walking, it can decrease stress. It improves mood, decreases anxiety and depression that we might see, especially as we're waiting for these patients. Walking off the unit for a few minutes can help to just clear the mind and refocus, again, decreasing stress that's building up. And laughing is probably one of the best medicines. We've heard this before, but laughing actually increases immune cells and infection-fighting antibodies. So watching funny movies, playing games, and laughing with friends and family is a great way to decrease stress and actually build the immune system. And nutrition is a big part of this. It's a major part of immune health, especially vitamins A, C, and D, and zinc. So we can get this from foods like lots of fruits and vegetables, citruses, berries, dark green leafy vegetables. But when we can't get these vitamins and these nutrients from concentrated foods, supplements are an excellent substitution. So I would just advise people to talk with their doctors about dosing for these supplements, but that is a great way to boost your immune system. Also, staying away from processed and artificial sugars, which actually break down the immune system, is going to be important. So trying to avoid those donuts that are brought in the morning or that piece of pizza that somebody left will help to increase immune system. And actually 90% of the immune system is gut health. So probiotics can be really helpful for many people.
One of the concerns here coming out of a lot of hospitals is the lack of supplies, or based on what they project as far as the number of patients that could come in the coming weeks, running out of certain supplies, be it ventilators, masks, hospital beds, that sort of thing. What can hospitals do to prepare for that? Or are there other measures that they can put into place if the inevitable does happen and they run out of necessary supplies?
So the CDC has provided some excellent guidelines for personnel as supplies run low or as they run out. Again, some of these preparations we've already talked about earlier that are designed to preserve supplies and other measures. But we can also increase bundling of care of patients, which means that providers will go into the room doing more at one time, making less visits, and that way using less resources for each time that they go in. We're seeing that the CDC is recommending that if needed, we can extend the use of equipment beyond the typical recommended expiration date. Using tissues for patients to cover their face and their noses will help to reserve masks for healthcare providers. And there are special filtration systems or ventilated headboards that can be used that actually draw the exhaled air to a filter to protect the providers better if they have to go in with decreased or no protection at all. We're also seeing that the FDA has more flexible regulations now to allow for quicker mass production of supplies by the design, automotive, and fashion companies, among others. And this is going to really help to fill that void. As we kind of look down the road, hopefully this won't happen, but If it does, and we really are seeing no supplies, we will start to decrease members of the healthcare field who are at higher risk. So older people, pregnant people, people with chronic illnesses that are actually providers, we'll go ahead and take them out of the system. So we're going to protect them, and we're going to reserve those protection supplies for others. And we're seeing a lot of homemade masks being made now across the country using scarves, bandanas, things like that to prepare for potential loss of supplies.
Thank you, guys. That's Dr. Dawn Day at Spring Arbor University in Michigan talking about the stress and the strain this pandemic is having on our healthcare professionals and what those healthcare professionals are doing to keep themselves safe. Let's head to the Weather Center one more time.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. On the midday weather map, we've got quite the storm swirling well off the East Coast. And although its main impacts will stay far from here, its peripheral impacts will include a breeze this afternoon, some clouds, and a few spotty sprinkles tonight and tomorrow. Our forecast for this afternoon, sunshine, some patchy clouds, a bit of a breeze for some, and temperatures peaking in the 40s to near 50. A fair amount of cloudiness around tonight and tomorrow. A couple of sprinkles and flurries for a few, especially the areas around central New York and eastern Pennsylvania. Low tonight, 30s. The high tomorrow, 40s to near 50. Friday night, the clouds will linger, but then clear for some developing sunshine on Saturday with a high temperature then in the 50s.
Okay, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. Finally at noontime, Good Night with Dolly. Tonight at 7, Dolly Parton will read bedtime stories to kids across America.
Hello, I'm Dolly Parton, the book lady from the Imagination Library. I want you to join me April the 2nd when I start Good Night with Dolly. I'm going to be reading some stories from the Imagination Library.
The country music legend says the first book she's going to read tonight is The Little Engine That Could. Dolly Parton says it's just her way to help families who are trying to cope with all the bad in the world right now. Good Night with Dolly will take place every Thursday night across America for the next 10 weeks. That is the world we live in this Thursday. As always, thanks for joining us. Be safe out there. I'm Bill Price. Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.